Everybody's got a guy.
Well, I know a guy too.
Actually, two guys. I got Sal and his brother Ben. And I drive 2 hours from Northwest Indiana all the way to Nordica and Addison on the northwest side of the city, passing all the other butcher shops to get to Joseph's Finest Meats. Why? Because I grew up in a butcher shop. I know what quality is. I know what attention to detail is. That's Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street in Chicago. Homemade sausages. Oh, yeah. USDA prime-aged beef and butchers who know what they're doing. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Go to Joseph's Finest Meats, get some Italian sausage, and you'll never want to go anywhere else. And it's the only thing that Betty will make when she's making peppers and sausage. She wants Joseph's. And that's an endorsement based not on anything other than the quality of their work. Because my name means something to me, and their name means something to them. Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street in Chicago. A family tradition since 1977. A proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. So I'm putting together the moods of the month, the horde of idiots ranging to the horizon, and how we do we fight them with the open hand and a nah and a fisai tho. Our republic still stands, but barely, and what a month it has been. Consider what happened in Cincinnati with the racial beatdown, the Cincinnati beatdown, and the police chief telling you it's not anything to worry about, and elected officials talking about how the victims deserve their beating. And then comes along another story, another signal of the rot and destruction in the republic. When I saw a 2016 interview of President Obama, the Wizard of Our Thousand Kings, remember that Uriah Heep song? He was the special one who could say and do anything. And he sits in this interview and talks about the intelligence report that categorically nails Trump as an agent of the Russians. Except for one problem. Now that we look back on the evidence that's come out since that time, you can see how clearly and simply he lies. He is an elegant, elegant liar. But what was stirring me up was that I was so interested in giving the mutza to the police chief of Cincinnati and all those fools out there screaming and hooting. And then I see Barack Obama, that people beloved, that people raised, especially in Chicago, and he's lying as if butter wouldn't melt on his tongue. And I thought, what is the worst of these two incidents? The lies of Obama that we know from Tulsi Gabbard and others, other information has come forth that he lied and he directed James Comey and Brennan, the CIA chief, to lie in the Oval Office directed at Trump. Or is it the Cincinnati beatdown and the racial animosity that it's engendering? Which is the greatest threat to the republic? What is the worst part of all this? That's what I've been struggling with, and just so happens that I'm doing a podcast today with Jeff Carlin. As always, Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, friend of Katz, baker of pies, future physics teacher, and me, I'm John Cass, Orthodox Christian, columnist, Chicago, former Chicagoan, although I love Chicago. I loved it when it was like 2 a.m. and you could go get jerk chicken on the west side, not worried about being shot. So where are you as the candidates line up to win, desperate pleading to win the mutza of the month? Where are you as their arms are outstretched? Please pick me. Please pick me. The idiots like J.B. Pritzker talking about gerrymandering, saving the people of Texas from the state that is known for corruption and gerrymandering, Illinois. What is gerrymandering anyway? Do you know what it is? Look at Louis Gutierrez's district, the old, what is it, 4th or 5th district? And you'll see a C as if a kindergartner on acid drew it. That's the legacy of the Democratic Party in Illinois and Chicago. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, Jeff Carlin, have you seen the Obama Temple of Fealty and Adoration and Love?
Oh, my God, John. This is a good place to start, because my wife and I were driving to Michigan a couple of weeks ago. We drove right past it, and this is for those who don't know, it's the Obama Center. It's not a library, because the library is technically like next door, you know, presidential library. This is like the Obama Foundation Temple of Hope. And it's going to have like a, I'm sure there's going to be a bookstore, but there's like, he's going to put in recording studios and community stuff, and that's all great. But the thing itself, it is ugly. Like,
horrid.
It's
horrid.
It almost looks like an overgrown obelisk, and it doesn't have a lot of windows in it. I mean, there is some stained glass looking thing that kind of looks cool, but it faces north, which doesn't get a lot of light, so I don't even know why it's there. Like, why would you put a stained glass window on the north side of a building, just in basic architecture terms? But
what is it? It's like it comes out of some sort of 1950s John Le Carré communist world, right? It's East Germany,
right? It's very but it's like a Metropolitan Corrections, you know, building downtown, and it's like it has that weird, like, it almost looks like it's built with like these slit windows, so they can only fire arrows through it, you know, very medieval-esque. And of course, you know, like you said, in great Chicago fashion, they took public lands and, you know, were reworking them and tearing it up. And you know, it was a beautiful park that supposedly nobody used, even though everybody who lived around there says it's used all the time. And now it's going to be part of this, you know, groundwork of trying to rebuild that area, which already was very, it's Hyde Park.
University of Chicago professor Richard Epstein tried, along with other people there, to stop the construction because they didn't want these great old trees ripped down, but they did.
Yeah. And I love the irony, though, because it's within, you know, a baseball's toss almost of the Museum of Science and Industry, which is now the Griffin Museum of Science and Industry, which the irony there is too rich. And for those who don't know, this is somebody who donated, I think it was $125 million. This is Ken Griffin, who is the founder and owner of Citadel, a hedge fund of sorts.
And then he leaves.
Right. And then because Illinois is, you know, he says Chicago is going to be too dangerous to have an offices downtown and the taxes are insane. So he rips root and goes to Florida. But it's the Griffin and the Obama thing are like right next to each other. And the irony there is just so too rich. I mean, it's very Chicago. It's a great museum. I mean, he didn't build it, but what he's doing is going to build new things and allow them to move on for a long time. And that's why he got his name on it, which is people get so mad that they want it. Like, people post on like Reddit, like, hey, I'm coming to Chicago. Is the Griffin Museum great to see? And people just go up in arms like, oh, God, Griffin. Oh, I can't believe it. You know?
Yeah, because they're leftists on Reddit. But, you know.
Yeah, well, we also have that. We still call it the Sears Tower, even though it hasn't been that for 20 years.
I call it Sox Park.
Right, exactly.
But the other thing, if you want to see the value of the Obama Temple, you play that video. You have it, right? We have that video or audio where the interview, he starts off talking about the things he's found. And they're all lies. They're all lies that were generated in the White House at his direction. Everything he says is in contradiction to the report that he had just received. He had gotten a report. The report said, no, Trump was not a stooge of Putin. And guess what? Obama insisted that they change it and create the story that Trump was the stooge of Putin. I mean, my God, the audacity of hope is really amazing when you can lie like that.
Yeah. So this interview is from like December of 2016, where Obama sits down with Doug Inskeep of NPR to talk about this whole Russia collusion, not even Russia collusion, it's just the Russian impact on the election.
Did the Russian hack of the Democratic National Committee and other targets actually affect the results of the election, in your view?
There's no doubt that it contributed to an atmosphere in which the only focus for weeks at a time, months at a time, were Hillary's emails, the Clinton Foundation, political gossip surrounding the DNC, and that whole swirl that ended up dominating the news meant that, number one, issues weren't talked about a lot in the coverage. Huge policy differences were not debated and vetted. Elections can always turn out differently. You never know which factors are going to make a difference. But I have no doubt that it had some impact. Everyone now acting surprised by the CIA assessment that this was done purposely to improve Trump's chances. And my only point was that shouldn't be treated as a blockbuster because that was the worst kept secret in this town. Everybody understood that. It was reported on. It's a pretty clear inference that people would draw and did draw that this was helping the Trump campaign and it was hurting the Hillary campaign. The president-elect has been very honest about his admiration for Putin and that he hopes to forge a more cooperative relationship with him and focus on the threat of Islamic terrorism. Then my only point was we shouldn't now suddenly act as if this is a huge revelation. Every intelligence agency in the federal government arrived at a consensus that the Russians had hacked the DNC, and the information was now being released was as a consequence of a decision by Russian intelligence and Russian officials at the highest levels. So what the CIA is now assessing, which was it was done purposefully to tilt the election in the direction of a particular candidate, shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, and in fact isn't a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, and at this point, Obama has left, and then all of a sudden has to come back because he's got some other piece of information he's got to share, which is kind of sketchy. It sounds like he might have talked to some comms people about messaging or making sure he doesn't lay himself in a trap knowing that what he's about to say is or has said isn't exactly true and that, well, there could be more information later down the line.
You had something you wanted to add.
When we're discussing the issue of the Russia hack, I think it is worth noting that when it comes to the motivations of the Russians, that there are still a whole range of assessments taking place among the agencies. And so when I receive a final report, you know, we'll be able to, I think, give us a comprehensive and best guess as to those motivations. But that does not in any way, I think, detract from the basic point that everyone during the election perceived accurately that, in fact, what the Russian hack had done was create more problems for the Clinton the Clinton campaign than it had for the Trump campaign.
I think you're stopping short of endorsing the CIA conclusion that the hack was designed to help Donald Trump as opposed to some other objective?
Well, I think the point I'm making is that right now what you've had are CIA leaks, not an official document. And I think it's important for the process of various agencies comparing notes and thinking about these assessments, because it's not as if in any of these circumstances, you know, you just have a signed letter regarding Russian intentions that's floating around. These are all assessments made based on a wide range of evidence, and different agencies are still looking at all that stuff, gathering it together, and hopefully putting it into a single package. That's precisely why I've asked that report to be issued before the 20th, so that those aspects of it, at least that are not classified, can be presented in some form to the public. Those aspects of it that are classified can be presented, as we've consistently done, on a bipartisan basis to the members of Congress and the relevant committees.
What do you think, Jeff? What did you think of hearing after you heard it?
The crazy part about it to me, and obviously the lying is, you know, I'm taking that, put that aside, because it's clear that this was it was a completely manufactured saga and, you know, a scandal. I'm putting air quotes on that. And the whole Trump Russiagate is totally been disproven, and that it was right. You, when listening to that audio, and there's these pauses where Obama is trying to formulate and make sure he hits the talking points. But we're talking December of 2016, so the election's already been decided. Trump is already
Hillary has lost, right?
Right. Trump is already the next president, and you have the sitting president essentially laying out this guideline for everyone to run with that says, hey, you just elected a guy who's essentially a stooge of the Russians, and he got all this information from the Russians to discredit his opponent, and how, you know, watch out for him. Like, that, I mean, that's the gist of what he spends his time talking about. And he lays it out, and you can see him looking down and trying to remember the points. It's not like he's looking up remembering stuff. He's looking down trying to manufacture these thoughts in his head. And, you know,
he doesn't want people to see his face.
Well, I mean, he's on camera, so you can't avoid his face. But I'm talking about body language. Like, you know, if you look up and remember something to, you know, on one side, it's usually you're looking, you're remembering. If you look on the other side, it's usually you're down and to the left. You're looking at you're manufacturing stuff. Right. And so you see him do that in real time, and it's icky. I mean, and I say that in the political sense, like, if I'm this president, you know, and he's Mr. Democracy and Mr. Everyone should run, you know, everything should be great and everybody should be on above board and they go low, we go high. It's why are you doing this? What's the point? And it's obviously power. It's power, right? It's obviously to protect the big D is as they move away from power and discredit Trump. And as we know, we found out it's nonsense. It's not true. He knows it's not true by this point. He knows that all this stuff is, you know, gossip at best, which he even calls, you know, he calls all the stuff about Hillary that they were trying to distract from as gossip, political gossip. So it's just it hurts to really think about it in that sense, John. You kind of pointed out that you have to feel like you lose any sort of respect for the guy. I mean, he's obviously in the Chicago sense, and, you know, hey, he's our guy.
He is the Chicago way, isn't he?
Right. He's a great Chicago. He's a great politician. He's, you know, and much the way Madigan was a great politician. You know, they can manipulate the narrative and to make it like, hey, look at me, I'm the guy. Hey, look, I'm the guy. You want to believe me? You know, that's.
But people should know about you. You and I have our differences. We're friends, but we have differences. I am definitely a conservative. You have not been a Trump supporter, MAGA guy like me.
No. Yeah.
And still, you are seeing Obama as a liar. That's kind of reflective of everything that this audio tape goes into, this NPR interview, because he finishes the interview. The thing that's really stunning, he finishes the interview, leaves, and then returns to talk about a new intelligence assessment.
Right.
That would be dropping. It's dropping right before Trump's inauguration, so they can portray him as the stooge to have people like Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell screaming at the top of their lungs, "He's a Russian stooge." All those people, he's a stooge. He works for Russia.
Yeah. Well, they knew that their only game plan at that point, now that he'd won the election,
character assassination.
Well, right. Well, impeachment, ultimately. I mean, they were laying the groundwork for, you know, to force the impeachment. I mean, that's where it went. And that's where, you know, Trump won. I mean, impeachment is so political now, but even then, I mean, and, you know, I can't slide that slide dry because, you know, we talked about this whole idea that like the Smithsonian's were pulling the impeachment discussion out of the display. Like, I don't even understand that, why Trump would even push that. I mean, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know. I don't have the facts on that. But the fact that he was essentially vindicated because he wasn't technically removed from office. It's just like, hey, look, he should be able to shining a light on it, being like, hey, look at what these idiots tried to do to me, and look how stupid it seemed once they started to get into the numbers. I mean, for him, it's a victory. It should be a feather in his cap because no one else has been twice impeached, and it should be like, look, this is what I was up against, and then I still won again. You know, that's why that's why I feel weird about that.
MAGA will wear all that as a red badge of courage, but
sure.
I'm asking them and you and me to step away from the MAGA tribalism for a moment. What effect does this have on when we take the institutions and destroy them and turn them into our playthings?
Mm-hmm.
And then we wonder what happened to the Republic. Why is our Republic fraying?
Right. It's like standing outside of the burning rubble of Alexandria being like, what happened?
Yeah, who started this fire?
What happened? Yeah, I know. That's where we are. I mean, that's what we were leading to. You know, and you're right. It's both sides have matches in their hands one way or another, and they've been just tossing it back and forth for generations.
But I guess this will be seen as a partisan dig. I don't mean it to be, but I look at what they've done. You know, the two impeachments that failed, the lawfare that they tried to break him with fines of $500 million. They tried to destroy this man and his family, and then he was shot once, and then he was almost murdered the second time. What can I glean from that? And I don't want to give Obama the mutza because he's the president. I respect the president. I'm not like Delia Ramirez. She's a congressman, Chuy Garcia congressman, saying I'm a proud Guatemalan. No, I'm a proud American. I want our president to be revered and great. But I don't want Obama to bear the mutza. But then again, all this stuff was done to benefit Hillary Clinton. What am I to do?
I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily for her benefit because she lost. I mean, she was already out, and I think it was just for the Democrats in general, you know, as a party. Right. She's not. And at that point, you know, why is Obama carrying the water for this whole thing? Because he's the only one who is, in air quotes here, you know, above the fray, because he wasn't directly involved in the election or whatever, and he's a outgoing president, so he's still got some cachet, it sounds like, and his power is coming to an end in that position. So he's doing it for the Democrats, big deal there. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's why it's even worse, because you want, you know, I don't want the president in his authority, any president in his authority as president, to come out and play politics. I mean, I know it happens, and I'm not naive. I mean, obviously that's the game. But, you know, there's how many people actually vote, right? I mean, we're talking turnouts in presidential elections. Maybe we cut half of them off because they can't vote. Maybe, you know, we're at 60% of the population who's eligible to vote. Maybe. I mean, that's a big maybe. 30% of the total population. So why would you discount everybody else who didn't vote for you for whatever the reason, or, you know, play your own politics for whatever reason? for the Republic. I mean, the Republic needs to be stable. The Republic needs to exist. And this is coming from the guy who is all about, oh, fight the good fight, and we're going to be the hope and change comes to America and all that crap. That was great, you know, kumbaya, but in reality, it did nothing more than inflame things and make things worse, it seemed.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com.
There's a new sheriff in town.
This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
But as he settles in, can you deal with the hysteria, the meltdowns, the constant whining?
I don't know what to do.
You know what you need? You need a good cup of common sense.
It's just common sense.
Like the kind of common sense you get when you subscribe to johncassnews.com. I'm John Cass, 40 years a journalist in Chicago.
It's the Chicago way.
I opened this website, John Cass News, so that you could have a decent cup of common sense.
This great country of ours was built on its entrepreneurial spirit.
It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Subscribe today to get access to great columns from John Cass, Dan Proft, and others. Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
Well, I don't think we're going to solve this now. I can't solve this from the isolation of my office, which is not Obama's office. I don't live in the Obama Center, but I have to ask you another question. Okay?
Sure.
On another topic similar to this, Chicago and Illinois politics are probably the most corrupt in the nation. And yet here, Fat Boy shows up on the failed Stephen Colbert show to show us how he's going to help the nation. What is that about?
Pritzker's, you know, late night appearance aside, because I never put any faith in it, and especially even, you know, anybody talking at those things and showing up as a guest, because they're always hawking something, pushing something, and that's kind of the whole gist. And I think more important, and for those who haven't seen it, I'm sure if you haven't seen it, then you've been on vacation, lucky you, that there's this whole rigmarole about sexist Republicans wanting to redraw maps to pull seats away from Democrats, and Democrats are fleeing Texas. And what do? They go to one of the most corrupt states in the union, if not the most corrupt, most gerrymandered states in the union. We'll get to that. But you've got Pritzker standing in front of them, and this is what he says. And it's just, you listen to what he says, and then we'll take bring it back and explain why it's so foolish. But here's what he says.
And what do MAGA Republicans in Texas do when Donald Trump ignores, well, his oath of office and theirs, and when they're taking it upon themselves to thwart the will of the American people? Well, they say, when Donald Trump calls, they say, yes, sir, right away, sir. Happy to lick your boot, sir. Yeah. When Donald Trump says jump, Greg Abbott and Ken Paxton say, how high? They don't care that they're violating the Voting Rights Act and racially gerrymandering their state. Well, they're hoping they can rob the bank and get away before anyone notices.
That's, I mean, right there. The irony of that is so rich, so rich. I mean, we're talking about Illinois, a state who is probably one of the most gerrymandered states in racial lines of all time. I mean, we have a district here in Illinois that touches three different states. I'm not talking like Indiana, Wisconsin. I'm talking Missouri, Kentucky, and Indiana. And why is that? I mean, it's so that they can carve out a little heavy set place where a bunch of Democrats can get reelected, and then also include a bunch of Republicans. And it's,
what do you think the Republicans should do? I say, balls out, go for it, go for the changes, because, you know, the Democrats benefit from a congressional map that was drawn using illegals, not to vote, not as voters, but the number of illegals in this country, the census counted them, and that had impact on the development of the congressional districts.
Right.
Why should people who, that was their plan, to bring them all in and pack them into, you know, and pack the Congress with their supporters. I don't think they should be rewarded.
We've talked about this off, you know, between us over the years, and I think the whole idea of way any states, you know, we have the ability to draw maps that are perfectly representative and make it more equal representation, so that you don't have somebody raising, you know, $10,000 winning a primary and then they're right off to Congress. You know, there's no.
How about AI concept. Map?
Well, I mean, you can use AI as a tool, so we can use it, but it's obviously be people who have to be doing it. I mean, there are ways to make it really representative, and I hate the whole idea. I hate Illinois' way that we do it. It's awful, and it should be representative of closer to a, you know, if we know the state has X number of people in it, it should be representative, you know, so people have to come together and discuss things, and then the people can say, I want the person who made a better argument to win. Like, it doesn't, it shouldn't be this weird, I can get a win a primary and don't have to worry about a general election, because then it takes the power away from people, because it's just, it's not representative. I think your point, John, about the census thing is, you know, it's a loophole that politicians on both sides, but predominantly the left, have been using to make to take power, and I don't think you're going to be able to fix it. I mean, it's the Constitution just says people, right? It doesn't say citizens. It doesn't say voters. And so, how do you get away from that? This and using that as your base. I mean, there's going to have to be a long uphill climb, I think, to change the Constitution if you can get it. I mean, there are laws, voting laws, that can kind of change, but ultimately you go back to the idea that the Constitution says it's based on the census, and the census says people, you know, what do you do? I don't know. I'm not a constitutional lawyer or scholar, but I have basic understanding of language.
Well, I don't know. I think that they should not I don't think we should. There are people telling the Republicans now, please don't go overboard. Don't do this. Particularly pundits on the left and Democrats who are asking Republicans for restraint. Mm-hmm. They always ask for this at the moment of, they're telling the hunter to back off right when he has the deer in his sights. And I'm not talking about killing anybody. But I am talking about affecting the job that was begun and finishing it. And so they're saying, please don't do this now, because don't you love the Republic? And please back off. But I'm seeing, as I think I mentioned in this podcast, two murder attempts on President Trump's life, both by leftists. The Democrats, Letitia James, Fannie Willis, and other prosecutors, Jack Smith, have been disgraced. They tried to use the law to break the man, to destroy his family, to destroy his fortune, to destroy his name. And now we see Obama and CIA and FBI with Comey cabal to destroy his name with the American people, and now they're asking, please take a step back. I mean, this stuff, you can't make this up. Who's that? How dare you ask that of a man? You care about the Republic after all you've done? You've used the FBI and the CIA and various lone assassins, crazy people, and so on and so on, and Letitia James and Fannie Willis, and you're asking to save the Republic now? Don't be pathetic. I mean, that's pathetic. I mean, what's wrong with me, Jeff, that I don't see their point of view?
I don't know, John. I mean, I know it's a rhetorical question, so I don't really have an answer, but right. I get it. There's a lot of there, right? I mean, we don't need to go into the particulars of everything, but it does seem like, you know, we've gone beyond the pale, well beyond. I mean, the Obama tape alone shows that there's this disingenuous care for the Republic, and that, you know, okay, now the cat's out of the bag and you want to put it back in. It doesn't make sense. And we know why they're doing it. I mean, JB was that whole press release speed or the press release speech he made was all about, you know, trying to line himself up to go after Trump and the MAGA world in the next presidential election. But it didn't. I mean, most people saw through it as just being silly. And at the end of the day, the Democrats' representatives from Texas are going to have to go back to Texas at some point and do their job. And the way the power is seated in Texas, Republicans have control of almost all the levers, and they're just going to get it done then. You know, it's not like they've done anything other than just grandstand for no reason. So it's they're wasting people's time. They're wasting money. They're just giving Pritzker just a useless photo op that the whole thing is annoying.
Do you remember Tudor the turtle when he was lost in the time warp? Drizzle, drazzle, drazzle, drum. Time for this one to come home. So I have to call Tudor the Turtle back because I can't let him finish his task, because we have another topic, and that is, let's take the politics out of it. I want to talk about these scientists. This is your area.
Okay.
These dang scientists that would want to colonize the moon, and then Neil deGrasse Tyson or some other fake physicist.
Oh, easy, John. He's not a fake physicist.
Well, then what is he? Who's out there? Someone is screaming, stop the colonialism.
That wasn't him. You're misconstruing it, John. It was a conversation. It was on. You sent me this too. It was the CBS. You know, again, they're in the news a lot.
Was it Gail King?
No. This was Mornings Plus. So I think it was online. But there was Adriana Diaz and Vladimir Duthiers, or am I mispronouncing there? They were trying to kind of assert that we shouldn't be colonized. You know, look, Western colonization has been so bad, and it's much, it's done so horrible things, which, yeah, sure, that's fine. You can make that argument. Plenty of people were enslaved and died, and yeah. There were a lot of mistakes made, sure. But their point was that this is going to happen on the moon now. And Tyson steps up and says, but there are no people on the moon. So how do you forcibly colonize a place if your argument is that a lot of people were hurt, but there are no people there? You know, that doesn't make any sense.
Is it inevitable that we're going to have to go to the moon and try to colonize the moon?
Well, consider that we could have stayed there in 1972, but we didn't. Could have gone back in 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, but we didn't. All of a sudden, we have the Artemis program. We're going back to the moon. Why? China says they're going back to the moon. Once again, we're being reactive. I don't have a problem with that. I just want people to be honest about the motives. So when he says,
isn't there a reality where, this planet is not going to be able to sustain us for the long term, and we're going to have to find elsewhere?
Well, okay, by sane estimates, it looks like our population will level off at about 10 billion. But if we want to keep growing a population, or if we want to live forever, all right, we're going to need another planet.
So is that the moon? Because
I don't want to live on the moon.
Right. Will it serve as a functional life source eventually for human beings? And B, we know how the age of colonialism worked on this planet. Should we be trying to colonize and saying that there's a keep out zone that not other countries can participate in?
Well, the real problem with the colonization history in Western civilization is that there were people already there.
Right.
Right? There are no moon beings that were displaced.
As far as we know.
or Martians. Yeah. I'm just saying, the moon and Mars, yes, they would be the next place you might put people, but I don't see it as it makes a good headline and clickbait, but I don't see it as a realistic way to deal with our overpopulation or overconsumption.
They don't like the idea of the word colony. They don't like the idea
of people
going out and planting a flag and saying, this is ours.
Right. It's just it's the worst attempt at a dog whistle I've ever seen, because they're just missing the point. And Tyson, he believes that it's not, that's not the problem. The problem is that it should be much like we did in Antarctica. It should be this neutral space where we encourage everybody to have a chance to do science. And,
except China, right?
Well, I mean, not really, because he's all for China to be up there too. I mean, China can work in Antarctica if they want to. That's the whole point, is that it's absolutely, we all agree that this should be a safe haven for science and understanding. And his argument, which is an argument I believe in, it's not just, you know, this is not just limited to Trump's administration, is right. that you have these leaders who are like, oh, let's go to the moon, or let's go to Mars, or let's do this, and let's do that. And then to make their friends happy, or to say that they're, you know, fiscally conservative or fiscally responsible, then they cut the budget from NASA. And yes, NASA's budget is ridiculous if you want to think about it in terms of dollars and cents and people who could maybe be helped by that. And I'm all for being reasonable with the money we send, but don't tell me that you're going to get us to the moon in less than 5 years and also eliminating, you know, 6 to 10% of the NASA's budget. It's just disingenuous. It's not a real argument.
Are there any minerals that are valuable on the moon that we could get and bring back here?
No, the energy needed to bring back anything of value, like weight tonnage, is impossible by anything we have now to make it worthwhile. You'd spend so much time and energy on fuel to get there and get it back. You know, you just have to have a big craft that could do that, and a big craft to land on the moon, and that big craft has to take off from the moon and then come back, and then has to make it through our atmosphere, and it's a bigger craft. So your tonnage would have to be really small. I mean, we're talking like when Neil Armstrong and company landed on the moon, they brought back, you know, grams of stuff to study because it just is too expensive to bring stuff back. And in reality, you know, they want to talk, worried about people being on the moon. You know, humans aren't going to be on the moon mining for things. We're going to land, and we already have that technology. It already exists. We're going to land drones and robots that'll be able to work on their own and do things and maybe lay the groundwork for humans to be on have a base. But the NASA's real plan is to have a base floating around the moon of refueling, because one of the hardest things for deep space travel, if you were going to go to Mars, if we're going to make Mars a regular thing, you have to be able to get off the planet. And that's very hard. It takes a lot of fuel. That's where most of your fuel is spent, is getting into escape velocity so you can get in orbit around our planet and then move from there. And so you use your fuel's weight. And so you don't want to take the fuel weight with you that you would need to then move on to Mars, because it's just extra weight that you have to lift. And there's this very simple formula where, you know, the more fuel you carry, the more lift you need, and the more lift, if you need more lift, you need to carry more fuel. And so every ounce of fuel has to be used pretty much for getting off the planet. If you have any extra fuel, the formula collapses and you won't have enough lift to get yourself into escape velocity. And there's some technology that's coming online that might allow us to change the calculus there a little bit, but it's far away from being actually serviceable. So the idea is, what NASA wants to do, and this has been the plan, is that to build a space station that would orbit the moon. And if you can take things like water is the thing you need that because you can get hydrogen from water, and hydrogen's a great fuel, and there's plenty of water frozen in the caps of the moon that you could then take up to a space station floating around the moon, have a shuttle dock there or a craft, whatever it's going to be called, and then go on to the Mars. And that way you'd have fuel outside of our planet that you wouldn't have to lift outside of our planet. And that's what they're hoping for. And the whole concept would be, essentially, you'd have drones and robots and things working on the soil of the moon to dig these things up, prepare them, put them in capsules, and launch them up to an orbiting space station that could then refuel and move on. That's not colonization. People aren't going to be there, and that's not anything like these people were talking about. But the fact that we're cutting budgets and we're moving money away from it means that this deadline or this goal for 2030 is completely impossible. And the fact that you have the interim head of NASA at Trump's behest saying that their goal is to have a new space station up by 2030. Well, that's another impossibility, because
Space Force, it has to have something to patrol, right?
Well, I mean, that's a different story, but we could dive into that another time. But the Space Force, you know, war in space is the next frontier, and it's already happening, and we already have technology where we can drop. We don't use it. We haven't used it yet. It's been in, quote, the testing phase, but the Chinese have displayed it. We certainly have it, where you could drop a weapon anywhere on the planet in like 45 minutes. You know, we could drop a serious nuclear weapon
on our planet or
on the moon. No, no, on our planet. I mean, that's what you're looking at. And then destroying satellites is a whole other piece of space warfare. That's what we should be focusing on. And we are. I mean, I know plenty of people who are working on these programs now, but that's not the point. But the point is that it took us to put the space station we have now. It took like 25 years to get it up and running to the point where it, and 30 years to get it to where it really was, you know, humming along and being able to do things. And that's really, you know, it just goes along this lines of people just saying things to say things. And it's just, it's, if anybody's listening to this and thinks that we're going to be on the moon in the next 4.5 or less than 4.5 years, it's a pipe dream.
What about Mars?
Well, that's another pipe dream. I mean, I'm all for, you know, trying. We're going to make attempts to do stuff like that, and it's interesting. But again, this stuff is not going to benefit the average human, benefit the average person. You know, it's just, this is money.
Wait a minute. You know, yeah. You're cut. Has Tang not benefited America?
Not really. It's benefited the dollar stores because it's one of the things they sell a lot of. But
I'm a child of the space age, man. I grew up with Tang, even though I hated it, with Star Trek.
Right.
You need something like that.
Well, it's not to say we didn't. I mean, that was a slightly different era. We were going from an analog era to the digital era. And that's where humanity benefited because we pushed that envelope faster and harder. And we did get things like microwaves and we did, you know, and CB radios, which, you know, technically existed, but better technology, GPS technology. These things all came from there, but they weren't, you know, they really were going to be stepstones that we were going to land on eventually, and we were going to get there.
Bobor the robot. Don't forget him.
Yeah, there you go. But the stuff that what we're talking about to get to these places, there's not a lot of new technology that has a lot of Earth use on it. I mean, we're talking about slightly better radiation protection. We're talking about more efficient rockets. We're talking about more efficient rocket engines. And all those things really only have space applications. Where we've really benefited is having the space station and having actual science being done in an almost zero gravity. And that's where we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on building another space station and having that up and running as soon as we can with better technology that's more efficient, that has more space. And much like, you know, we've talked about, you know, having a neutral space, you know, Russia and the United States have helped so many countries develop technology and at least have a chance at the table to study things in the space station. And that's what we should be focused on. I mean, that's where we really, you know, if we want to push humanity forward and we want to help people and help, you know, generations down the line, that's where our energy should be spent, not just landing on a rock that's already, you know, that a planet that's already dead, that's already way ahead of us, cosmically speaking, in its life cycle, and somehow planning that we're going to revitalize it, you know, which is just, it's sci-fi nonsense. And it's just not going to happen in the next 100 years. It's just not going to happen. And the benefit there is what? You know, a couple of very wealthy people could flee to Mars if the planet here collapses under some other reason. I mean, nah, it's a lot of smoke and no fire.
You know, these topics are so big that you can't put your head around it. Like, you need to be Philip K. Dick. Total Recall versus We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, which was the original Philip K. Dick story.
Right.
That created Total Recall.
Right. And Chad, I will say this, that there is some hope, you know, fast moving through the space and trying to get to places like Mars and the moon quickly. You know, there is some technology out there, some study and research out there that is looking at things like anti-gravity, you know, the ability to counteract and use very, very complex physics to maybe be able to make things lighter than air, you know, with technology and metals and energy. But that stuff, you know, that's the breakthrough we're looking for. We're getting closer, but it's still quite a ways away.
I think I'd just rather have it in my mind that somewhere in the Rocky Mountains, there's a crazy scientist drinking alcohol, and he wants to go up into space in a rocket ship that will be seen by alien beings who will sound like Michael Rennie. And they will show up at the appointed time and we'll all be friends in the space race together. Until they take straws and suck our brains out. That's it. That's our future. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend to cats, baker of pies, still waiting for my pie, Jeff. Maybe a peach pie, but I'm not going to Peachland. I get the peaches now from Michigan, but, you know, I'd still miss those Illinois peaches. Man, are they good. And for me, John Cass, executive editor, John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense, $50 a year. You get two columns from me and a podcast free, plus more columns from great writers like Jimmy Benakis, Dan Prof, Paul Vallis, many, many others. Thanks for joining us. And join us again, won't you, next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.